Well, good morning. I can get used to that sun being up when I drive out here. I don't know about the rest of you, but it's nice, isn't it? Appreciate those who are with us this morning. Got a good number for our class here this morning. We three kings of the Orient are, bearing gifts we traverse afar, field and fountain, moor and mountain, following yonder star. You know, for many, Christmas is a time of family gatherings, of big meals, exchanging gifts, I'll get that out. And of course, memories that we make. But for other people, Christmas is a time to celebrate the birth of Jesus. A time to remember all the events that surround the birth of Jesus, and especially the three kings who came from afar, from the Orient, to visit the baby Jesus. If I know by chance what the names of those three kings were, you know, they've been given names. Anybody know? You're going to learn something this morning. One of them's name is Caspar. He's the one in front there. The second one's Melchior, and the third one is Belshazzar. That's the three names given for the three kings who supposedly came to see Jesus the night of his birth. Well, the arrival of those three kings, of course, is found in Matthew chapter 2. And I keep saying three kings because when you look at Matthew chapter 2, you're going to find out, you know, they're never called kings. They're called magi, they're called wise men, but they're never called kings, are they? And we don't know if there was three of them. We don't know how many there were. There was more than one, but we don't know how many there were because of the text doesn't say, does it? Where do we get the number three from? Anybody know? Where's that come from? Yeah, the gifts. It comes from the gifts. They bring gifts. What do they bring to the Christ child? Do they bring what? Frankincense. They bring myrrh, and what else? And gold, yeah. So the three gifts brought to him. And again, we don't know if there were three. Did they come on the night of Christ's birth? No. How do we know that? Well, we know that by putting together the two places which talks about the birth of Christ. Matthew chapter 2 and Luke chapter 2. And when you put those texts together, and you read even in Matthew chapter 2, verses 39 and 40 there, I'm sorry, not 39:40. It's down there in verse. Where am I at here? Matthew chapter 2. They're living. They're in a house when the the wise men come. The magi come. Because the three is going to come up in just a moment here. That's why I'm stuck on three here. When they come to visit the Christ child. Now, from Luke's account, this might have been up to 2 years later that they finally got there. And arrived and came where the child was and where Mary and Joseph were at the time in a house there. So, the story that we're told as children, perhaps, and what the song gives us isn't correct. But that doesn't mean there were not three wise men that were associated with the birth of Jesus Christ. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. Our lesson this morning really is not so much about a character, but about an event that sometimes is overlooked as we talk about three wise men and a baby. Three wise men that had something very important to say about the events surrounding the birth of Christ and even things that happened after his birth. So let's look at the first one here. The first one we want to talk about is Isaiah. Isaiah is a wise man, of course, and he is a wise man that's associated with the birth of Jesus Christ. Isaiah lived around 750 B.C., prophesied at that time. He was a prophet primarily for the southern kingdom there of Judah, and much of his time spent as a prophet involved the reign of an evil king in Judah there by the name of Ahaz. Ahaz was just an awful king. But at this time, Syria and Israel were threatening Judah, and King Ahaz was terrified. And so God sends Isaiah to Ahaz to assure him that Israel and Syria would not prevail against them. And to affirm this message from the Lord, verse 11 of Isaiah chapter 7, Isaiah chapter 7, verse 11, says, God says to Ahaz to ask for a sign, to ask for a sign. And you remember Ahaz's response? I don't need no sign. I don't need no sign. Verse 12, it says, but Ahaz said, I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord. And the truth of the matter is that he'd already asked help from Assyria in these troubles that he was having with Syria and Israel. Well, if you look there in Isaiah chapter 7, you find out that he's going to get a sign of whether he wants it or not. And in verse 13, it says this. It says, listen now, O house of David, Is it too slight a thing for you to try the patience of men, that you will try the patience of my God as well? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel, God with us. And so Ahaz, he refuses to ask for a sign, but God says, I'm going to give you a sign anyway. And the sign is a virgin will be with child and bear a son. Now that text brings up a lot of questions that we might have in our minds, and a lot of questions have been asked and answered over the years. One question is, well, what is the meaning of the word virgin there in that text? And who is the virgin? And how is this assigned to Ahaz? And so let's try to answer those questions very quickly here. The meaning of the word virgin, the Hebrew word for virgin, Alma, and in the Greek it means one who has not known a man. And so sometimes in your texts or translations it might say a young maid or young woman instead of virgin. And sometimes it's that word is used in that respect. But here we've got a virgin that says that no man has known, a virgin shall conceive, the text says. And so this passage does not speak about a young lady who will marry and then conceive, or a young maiden. It speaks about a virgin who would conceive a child, which was biologically impossible to do. And so the sign is a virgin's going to have a child. Now who's the virgin? Well, who's asking for a sign? Or who did God say asked for a sign? He said Ahaz asked for a sign. And Ahaz says, I don't want a sign. And Isaiah says, God's going to give you a sign anyway. A virgin is going to conceive and have a child. And so who's the virgin? Well, some have said, well, the virgin had to have been some lady, some woman, some young woman who lived back during the days of Ahaz. Otherwise, how could that have been a sign for Ahaz? Yeah, that's a good question. Why would God give a sign to Ahaz that is not fulfilled during his days? And so some have supposed, perhaps, that this might have been a woman in Ahaz's harem. Some have even said, well, this might have been Isaiah's wife, but that can't be because Isaiah had already had a son. His son's with him here. And there may have been another woman somewhere out there that's going to have a child who's a virgin at that time, and she's going to bear this son, and that's going to be a sign to Ahaz. Well, the problem with that is this. Then there will be, what, two virgins that will conceive and have a child. The text says a virgin, singular, not a and another, plural. One virgin's going to conceive and have a child. And so the best way to understand, I think, what's being said here is that, all right, Ahaz, God says, you ask for any sign you want, he'll give it to you. Ahaz said, no, I don't need a sign. And God says, all right, I'm going to give not you a sign so much, but a sign to your nation. And that sign is going to be the birth of a child by a virgin. Ahaz will not see the fulfillment of that sign. But you know who will? The remnant will. His nation will. Those who live at the time when Christ, they're going to see that sign and understand the sign. And so the sign is given not so much to be fulfilled during the days of Ahaz, but be fulfilled for the sake of the nation of Israel itself. Now, how do we know this is the Christ, though? Well, over in Isaiah chapter 9, look at verses 6 and 7 there. Now, remember, the sign, she's going to bear a child, and the child is going to be God with us, Emmanuel, all right? Look at Isaiah chapter 9 there. Look at verses 6 and 7. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice from the time forward, even forward, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. Now, who is that? Who's the child? Well, that's the child that's spoken about back in chapter 7. And who is the only child that could ever fit the description given here in Isaiah chapter 9? Well, it has to be Jesus Christ, isn't it? Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting. You know, there's no other child ever born that fits that description. I don't care how much you love your son. He doesn't fit that description. And so that's only Jesus Christ. And so the sign given to Ahaz was to be fulfilled not during his day, but in the birth of Christ Jesus, which would come many, many years later. Now, you go and you look at the accounts of Christ's birth and how the angel came to Mary and the angel came to Joseph there. We find in Luke chapter 1 and also there in Matthew chapter 1. It all fits. It all points back to Isaiah chapter 7. In fact, in Matthew chapter 1, verse 23, behold, a virgin shall be with child and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which is translated God with us. Where did that come from? That came from Isaiah chapter 7. So there's no doubt that this wise man was talking about the events surrounding the birth of Jesus Christ. All right, that's one down. Talk about another one here. How about this wise man? Micah. You know, when those magi first arrived in Jerusalem, where'd they go to? Who did they go to seek out first? Where'd they go to? Yeah, they went to Herod, didn't they? They went to the king, the palace. They went to ask about this, you know, we've seen this star. Where's the king at? And, of course, Herod, he's upset by all this. And so Herod calls together his chief priests and asks them, where was the Christ to be born? And what do they say? Look at Matthew chapter 2 there in verse 5. Matthew chapter 2, verse 5. And so they said to him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet. Now, how did those chief priests and those wise men of Herod's there know that? Where did they get that from? Well, they got that from where? Micah chapter 2 and verse 5. So look at Micah chapter... You know, Micah's not one of those prophets we read it from a lot, do we? Micah chapter 2, verse 5. What does Micah have to say there? He says... He has 5-2. Micah has something to say about where the Christ was to be born. Now, if you know anything about Micah, you probably know this, that Micah was a contemporary of Isaiah. In fact, many of the things that Micah had to say, Isaiah had to say also. And some have even described Micah as being Isaiah in miniature. You know, his book isn't nearly as long as Isaiah's. But a lot of the themes that Isaiah dealt with, Micah dealt with. And so here we've got Micah, and he's going to pinpoint for us the birth of that child that Isaiah talked about over there in chapter 7 and in chapter 9. All right, where's it going to be at? Micah chapter 5, verse 2. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth are from old, from everlasting. Bethlehem. Bethlehem is mentioned 53 times in the Bible. Anybody know what that word means, Bethlehem? Well, I'm going to tell you here. Here's another one. House of bread. That's what it means. House of bread, Bethlehem. House of bread. There are actually two Bethlehems mentioned in the Bible. In Joshua chapter 19, verse 15, there is a Bethlehem that is in Zebulun in the north, about 7 miles from Nazareth. So there's a Bethlehem way up north. But that's not the Bethlehem the Christ was come from, was it? This is the Bethlehem in the south. The one that's down there in Judea in Micah chapter 5, verse 2. That's the specific town in which Jesus, the Christ, was to be born. Bethlehem wasn't a very large town. I'm sure you've been there several minutes. It's not very large even today, is it?
Bigger than it was here.
Bigger than it was here. Probably a big tourist place, wasn't it? But the Jews understood the prophecy. They understood that this is pointing not to the Bethlehem up north, but the Bethlehem down south here, and which is, what, about 6-7 miles outside of Jerusalem. So it's not very far from Jerusalem. And so Herod told the wise man in Matthew chapter 2, verses 7-8 there, that that's where the prophet said it was to be, where it was to take place, Bethlehem. Now over in Luke chapter 2, verse 15, again, it came to pass as the angels were gone away from then into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let us now go even to Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord hath made known to us. And so there's no doubt that the Christ was to be born in Bethlehem. Very specific in where that city or what city he was to be born in. Now, why I bring that up is because, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Book of Mormon says that Christ wasn't born in Bethlehem. Did you know that? Here's what the Book of Mormon says about the birth of Christ. It says, and behold, it shall be born of Mary at Jerusalem, which is the land of our forefathers, she being virgin, a precious and chosen vessel, who shall be overshadowed and conceived by the power of the Holy Ghost and bring forth a son, yea, even the Son of God. They believe that Jesus was born in Jerusalem. I had a chance to ask a Mormon one time about this. And you know what his answer was? Well, Bethlehem is in the vicinity of Jerusalem, and so it's the same thing. Same thing, you know. I guess it's like saying that, you know, the Christ is going to be born, you know, the scripture said that the Christ is going to be born in Tanner, and then the Mormons come along and said the Christ is going to be born in Athens. Well, somebody could say, well, you know, Tanner's in the vicinity of Athens, so it's the same thing. Then why is the Lord so specific, excuse me, about where he was to be born? And the fact of the matter is that on one case we've got divine prophecy, in another case we've got, and I won't say, somebody's imagination. And so that's what the Book of Mormon has to say. Well, that's the second wise man there, O Micah. How about the third one? Let's go to Luke chapter 2. Let's talk about Simeon here, Simon. Luke chapter 2 is the only other biblical account of the actual birth of Christ from Matthew chapter 2 would be the other one. And what Luke tries to do is to give us some order of how things probably progressed. You know, Luke being this, what is called the scientific gospel written by the doctor there. And so he kind of gives us the order here. Luke chapter 2 verses 9 through 14. We've got the angels visit the shepherds. And then chapter 2, 16, the shepherds visit the baby. Chapter 2 verse 21, on the eighth day, Jesus is circumcised. And of course, this is in keeping with the law. That first was given to Abraham back there in Genesis chapter 17. In Leviticus chapter 12, it becomes a part of the law of Moses. At the circumcision, the official name is given at that time. And of course, the angel already told Mary and Joseph what the name of the child was to be. And so we have the name Jesus is given, or Joshua, which means the Lord of salvation. Then Luke chapter 2, verse 22, the child is presented at the temple. Now, Leviticus chapter 12 deals with a lot of things regarding the birth of a child, a Jewish child, especially a male child, and how the mother is unclean for a period of time. In fact, if you look back in Leviticus chapter 12, verse 2, the mother's unclean for 7 days after birth. Then she is unable to enter the temple for another 33 days. And so we've got to see this in the order which Luke's trying to give us here in Luke chapter 2, that we've got the birth of Christ, Mary's unclean for 7 days. I think for a female, I think it's doubles. She's unclean. But we're looking about 40 days after his birth, they finally bring Christ to Jerusalem there and to the temple. And then there were certain sacrifices that were to be made. Even in the law, they made a provision. Well, if you had the money, you know, could afford it, you would sacrifice this thing. But if you couldn't, you could, you know, sacrifice two turtle doves, pigeons. And so Joseph and Mary, being devout Jews, went through all that. And of course, we know from Exodus chapter 13, verse 2, that every firstborn male that opens the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. And so Jesus belonged to the Lord on that occasion. Now, what it was is that a Levite would actually take the place of a male child from another tribe, and he would thus dedicate his rest of his life to service to the Lord. And so all those things take place now. But while it's taking place, while they're in Jerusalem, they come across the man there we know as Simeon or Simon. Same thing. Look at verse 25 there. He kind of appears out of nowhere, doesn't he? Luke chapter 2. And we're told very little about this man, aren't we? There's no mention what tribe he's from. There's no mention about his family, his wife, his children. Nothing's mentioned. He kind of drops out of the sky here. And he approaches this couple here with this child. Now, we are told this about him, that he was a righteous and devoted man, devout, that he looked forward to the consolation of Israel, which is an expression used in the Old Testament of God restoring to Israel through the Messiah, the relationship that he had with them. And also he says he's filled with his Holy Spirit. And it's the Spirit that led him to find Joseph and Mary there. Now, what does he say? Look at Luke chapter 2 there. And let me just kind of break this up for you here. Luke chapter 2, first off, he brings his message of salvation. Luke chapter 2, verse 29 and 30. He said, Lord, now you are letting your servant depart in peace according to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation. And so we get the impression, when I think of Simeon, I think of an aged man who's lived all his life looking forward for something to happen. And now he sees that child. That's salvation, he says. And he sees the child, and now he said, my eyes have seen the salvation you brought here. And so the Messiah was to bring salvation. But this salvation, according to Simeon, was not just limited for the Jews. Look on here, verse 31. Which you have prepared before the face of all people, a light to bring revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel. And so here's Simeon who sees this child and says, this is the child that's bringing salvation, but just not for us Jews, but for all people, Gentiles included. Now that's a remarkable statement. Now statements like that were made in the Old Testament about the inclusion of the Gentiles. But here this man approaches this couple, Joseph and Mary, and says this about the child. But he doesn't stop. He goes on and says something else about this child. Look at 34 and 35. Behold, this child is appointed for a fall and rise of many in Israel, and for a sign to be opposed, and a sword will pierce even your own soul to the end that thoughts from your hearts may be revealed. Now, how do you sum up what he just said there? The child's bringing salvation. He's bringing salvation for all. Is it always going to be happy times? Is always going to be joy surrounding this child? No. This child is going to bring tragedy to his mother. And you might say even that Simeon is unveiling, in some respects, the other side of the Messiah, which is found there in Psalm 22 and Isaiah 53. The suffering, death, the rejection that this child will go through. Preparing Mary for the heartache, grief that as she will see her own son rejected by his own fellow countrymen and finally to the point where they take him and they crucify him. Now look at the reaction here. We'll finish here. Look at the reaction down here in verse 33. And his father and mother were amazed at the things which were being said about him. Now that's prior to the talk about him being suffering and dying. But they're amazed by what this man was saying. Now remember, they had been told by the angel about this child, how special he was going to be. But now to hear a man that had waited all his life, seemingly, to see this one child born, to say those things, oh, they were truly amazed. All right, we'll stop here this morning. And we'll do another one in a couple weeks now.